This is Leland Bickford, editor-in-chief of the Colonial Network News Service, speaking to you once more from the press room at the administration building in the Portsmouth Navy Yard at Kittery, Maine. We are about to bring you the only interview that has been made with any of the survivors of the ill-fated submarine Squalus, which went to the bottom of the Atlantic 14 miles off this coast at 8:30 yesterday morning, carrying with her a crew of 59 men. Of this number, as you already know, 26 lost their lives, while the remaining 33 members of the crew were literally snatched from the grave, thanks to modern inventions used this day for the first time in the world's history. While naval officials have been most cooperative, there is one bar which they refuse to let down, and that was the imaginary line between the general public and a radio interview with any of the officials or any of the rescued. In this stand, they are justified. That point, no one can question. However, they have most graciously made possible the broadcast of a written interview secured a few minutes ago from Judson T. Bland of Norfolk, Virginia, one of the survivors. It was first planned to have this interview with Lieutenant John C. Nichols, one of the officers of the Squalus. But at the last moment, hospital authorities refused to permit Lieutenant Nichols to leave his bed, and Bland, one of the crew, was substituted in his place. Here is the interview. Question. Mr. Bland, the newspaper men would like you to tell them your story in your own words. What happened, how you first knew something was wrong, and everything as you saw it. And here is Bland's answer. The first thing I want to say, I am very happy to be here, and that I was with such a good bunch of shipmates. I never saw men handle a situation any better. The captain was perfectly cool. He gave his orders calmly, and the orders were carried out perfectly by each and every man. We made a perfectly normal dive. We were making a test dive at fast speed. The Navy Yard test superintendent was there. He was clocking the dive and made the statement as we went down that it would be a good dive. Then something happened. We don't know what it was, and we won't know until the boat is brought up. It was something that could not be helped. It could happen to any mechanism that requires complicated parts. However, we began taking in water through the ventilation line, and we knew something had gone aft. The captain below, just prior to that time, had reported that everything was all right. Men began working fast to shut off the flow of water. The instant the diving officer knew the water was coming in, he gave the word to blow the tanks. This order was carried out immediately and well. We took a terrific up angle, in my judgment about 45 degrees up by the bow. One man closed the door to the affected part of the ship while we were at this angle. It took super strength to do it. I don't see how he did it. Certain other valves were closed to stop the flow of water, and we kept the forward part of the ship pretty dry. All men were gotten out of the after part of the ship that we could possibly get out. I don't know if all compartments in the after part are flooded. I hope they are not. If not, more men may be gotten out. We lost all power and communication aft. Throughout the day, no one was excited, and everyone was living in hopes that we could be found. We fired smoke bombs at intervals. We heard the Sculpin's engines. We knew their engines because they are the same type we have. We were very much relieved. We knew we were found and that nothing and had nothing to worry about. We had no communication with the top side other than beating on the hull. All electric power was gone. Two men forward and two men in the control room continually beat signals all night, cold as it was. We got very good results. We were told that the Falcon would arrive about 4:30 in the morning. We all knew the Falcon had excellent equipment, and we also knew of the skillful divers working in conjunction with the Falcon's equipment. I am not afraid to say that there was not one man at any time who did not think he would be rescued. We knew we would be saved. The air got a little bad toward the last due to the fact that we were trying to conserve it, thinking we would be down longer than we were. However, we continued to conserve oxygen, and when the first rescue party arrived, we sent up the weakest man in the first party. I had been in a compartment where the air was bad, but I moved forward to a better compartment, and I went up in the second rescue party. I hope all the rest will be found. Question. There was no sign of undue excitement or anything bordering on panic at any time? None whatsoever. Question, where were you at the time of the flooding? Answer, I was in the control room. Question, how long after you dived did you realize you were in trouble? Answer, at least a minute. Question, were you in a position to see any of the activities of the induction valve? Answer, no, I was not. Question, was there any chlorine gas present? Answer, we only had chlorine gas about an hour prior to my coming up. It was discovered in the forward battery to a very small extent. We had our masks ready in case we needed them. Question, did you try at any time to communicate with the after compartment? Answer, yes, we tried for hours. Question, in what way? Answer, by telephone. Question, tell us, what did the crew do? How did you pass away the time? Answer, we passed the time by thinking of the various ways they would rescue us and things we would do if certain occasions came up. Question, what is your age, where are you from, and are you married? Answer, I am 30 years old. I have been in the service 12 and a half years. I am from Norfolk, Virginia. I have a wife and 14-month-old child, Lola Rochelle Bland. My wife's name is Nadus. She is in Portsmouth. She met us at the dock. Question, how long has your present enlistment to run? Answer, I have about 16 months left to do on a 4-year enlistment. That concludes the interview, ladies and gentlemen, and that is the first-hand story of Judson Bland.